You are listening to Mind Over Matters here on KEXP 90.3 FM Seattle. It is 7:30 and time once again for Community Forum, and we are lucky to have with us this morning David Clay and Tom Buchanan, who are both with the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, working at none other than Boeing. And that's what we're going to be talking about this morning, some of the realities of Boeing and where the company is headed. And want to start out and thank you both for coming in.
Thank you, Mike.
Let me ask you kind of a wide open question. First off, how long have you both worked there?
Well, I've worked 15 years and primarily down in Renton, but I've traveled from both the Renton facilities, Seattle and Everett, worked on a variety of aircraft systems.
I've been at the Boeing Company for 24 years in the wide body programs as a tool maker.
All right. So you've been there a significant period of time. I want to ask you about the changes that you've seen in that period of time that don't sit well with you, as well as I understand that you were involved in an election not so long ago that isn't quite what there were some problems with that and that the media just barely covered. So I want you to talk about that as well.
All right.
So let's start out, if we could, actually with that that election.
I was a candidate in 1997 and again in 2001 for district president with a group of people that felt that the incumbent, longtime entrenched incumbents, didn't do the job that they should be doing for the membership. And it was a real eye-opener to actually, you know, run against these folks. We had no idea the level of violations that had occurred during the election until after the fact, when people started coming forward and bringing information to us concerning things that they had seen. And we were complete novices to the process. And that is, you know, making complaint through your, you have to exhaust all internal remedy within your union before you go on to the Department of Labor, who are the, you know, they're the oversight, they're the regulators of the federal law that governs union elections. There were three main points that, there were about 22 main parts to our challenge to the election. There were three main complaints that were verified by the Department of Labor and later by a House subcommittee. The House Subcommittee on Education and the Workforce investigated the Department of Labor's investigation. And they also concluded and confirmed that three things affected the outcome of the election, and that's all that's needed to overturn an election, is that the absentee ballots were mishandled deliberately. People were sent out absentee ballots in the 1997 election, and there was information, a letter that went with the absentee ballot telling the people that they had to have their ballot in on that day that they received it. In fact, it was mailed out the day that the letter was saying that it was supposed to be back in. So the Department of Labor and this House subcommittee that investigated this election interviewed 263 people that received these letters and these absentee ballots and determined that 173 of these people did not vote because of these letters that were sent out with erroneous information. The difference in the election with close to 8,000 people, 8,000 members voting, the difference between myself and the person who won, the incumbent that won, was 174 votes. So that alone should have been enough to overturn the election. The other thing is that there's been a consistent evidence that the incumbents have had help from the Boeing Company. The Boeing Company has allowed the incumbents to transport voters off Boeing property onto Boeing property, and the incumbents use their union credentials that are issued by the company, and no matter if you notify security, the Department of Labor, the, you know, Boeing corporate labor relations, that these violations are occurring of them accessing the property, they get to do it, while the Boeing Company has deliberately limited our ability to campaign, and we cannot transport voters to the union hall. In some instances, you know, people were allowed on these vans. There were, in Everett alone, there were 20, the Boeing Everett plant where they build a 747, 767, 777. People were invited to ride the vans, told, the second shift members were told, well, don't worry about voting before work. Just come to work. We'll take you over there and we'll feed you lunch over to the union hall to vote. And when the people went to get on the vans to vote at lunchtime, they were asked who were they going to vote for, and if they said, well, you know, we're not going to tell you, or they said that they weren't going to vote for the incumbents, they wouldn't let them on the van. If people did get on the van on the way back, they said, who did you vote for? And if they said David Clay, they kicked them off the van, made them walk 2 miles back to the plant. So there are various violations that were confirmed. The Department of Labor in that election, and again in this election, despite the violations that were confirmed, they said it didn't affect the outcome of the election. And that seems to be their criteria. In this particular election, my name was removed from the in 2001. My name was removed from the ballot due to a prior holding of office restriction rule that the union has in place that is a violation of federal labor law. In real life, in public life, you don't have to be the mayor of Seattle before you run for the governor of Washington State. You don't have to be the governor of Washington State before you run for U.S. Senate. But the Machinist Union in District 751 has a rule that you have to be a member of their district council, the ruling body or legislative body of the district, in order to run for district president, which is illegal. The Department of Labor themselves sought a Supreme Court ruling on this, which they use in their pamphlet on how to run a union election, which states that the prior holding of office rules are illegal. And despite the fact that they confirm this, despite the fact that we had a National Labor Relations Board ruling in this past election that the Boeing company did deliberately prevent the opposition independent candidates from campaigning while the incumbents were allowed to campaign unfettered on Boeing property throughout Puget Sound and Spokane, once again they declined to overturn the election. Just this past week, Alan Mulally, the CEO of the Boeing Company, Commercial Aircraft Division, was in Olympia at a transportation hearing, and alongside him, sitting at by his knee, was our district president, Mark Blondin, who was my opponent in the recent election in 2001. And Alan Mulally was saying that he expects labor peace in the 2002 negotiations with the Machinist Union at Boeing. Well, I can see how he could state that publicly and without blinking an eye that he expects labor peace, because I imagine he expects some favors back for his help.
All right. So, and I think it'll become evident as we go on in this interview why the Boeing company perhaps wouldn't want people like yourself in power there.
I believe so.
Okay. Let's... Is there any hope of reversing any of these decisions at this point?
Well, I think that there's I think that this the Enron scandal and what's come to light there, where there's a regulatory agency and oversight that has failed. I think the same, you know, and the political influence that allowed that. I think the same thing is occurring here, and we're still hopeful that there is congressional oversight. The House subcommittee that did investigate these elections has called for hearings out here in Seattle, field hearings, as well as back in Washington, D.C., to discover why the Department of Labor is not doing what their duties are charged to do. And we're still approaching our congressional delegation, who is well aware of the problems. And they're well aware of the influence that District 751 has on local, state, and federal elections. So we're hopeful that this, you know, the wheels of justice turn slow, but believe me, they turn. And we do have the smoking gun, and we do have a bleeding body to show them just whether or not they're going to open their eyes.
All right. So it's a very powerful company, and it sounds like it's a very powerful union that you are a part of.
Yes.
So tell me about the things that... that you've seen over the last 15 years that you are really disturbed by?
Well, you know, I think we should start with right now. And last week, you know, an Alan Mulally interview in the Seattle Times on Sunday indicated how far he has shopped out, not just he, but a variety of people, and their corporate strategy is shopping out this company overseas or to other smaller shops, non-organized shops that basically... And a strategy that guts the company and has been done in the name of global influence, where we shop out to other countries like China, and supposedly we get in return aircraft production from them that's cheaper and they buy aircraft from us after we assemble it here in the Puget Sound. And he said, Mullally said, that 65% of our company has been shopped out at this point, more or less, and that that's where he wants to level off. Of course, at the same time this next week and during this whole period when we're talking about 767 tanker production for the military, which initially they wanted to move to the fuselage production to Mitsubishi that and make it even a more complete production facility there and then just ship the whole body over here instead of have it come from Wichita, they had to back off on that, mostly because it's a taxpayer-paid program where 100 767s get converted to military fuel tankers. But in the process, we see that figure even of 65% is not actually leveling off, that they're increasing production of some of the wide-body production in China for fuselage, and at the same time, we're having massive layoffs here in the Puget Sound. And to the extent that machinists still assemble these aircraft here, we're seeing that those jobs of assembly are becoming narrower and narrower, and that more and more complete production, this is their idea still, will be made in other places, and then we'll finally bring it in and put two screws in and we'll fly it away, kick the tires, and we're ready to go. We think that given the skills of the Puget Sound, given the people that are here, we're suffering under a great deal of change in this corporation, and that the corporation, like Enron, is becoming virtual, you know, that we're being run by financial people instead of by engineers and machinists and people who actually have built aircraft before. And to that extent, what we see is that the financial people, especially we've seen this accelerated since McDonnell Douglas came into this company, is that people in Chicago, the 300 people or so who are at corporate offices now in Chicago instead of Seattle, are basically acquisition and salesmen, and they're into financial intangibles. And when you deal with intangibles, very much like Enron, you lose a sense of where your production and where your strategy of a company, especially in aircraft production, where it goes. And you lose that sense of what it takes to build an aircraft, how to assemble the aircraft, where your future in terms of a skill pool is, and you lose, way before the planes start falling out of the sky, you lose that sense of what it takes to be an aircraft company. And I think a lot of people even here locally in management feel that, and I know we at the bottom, machinists and engineers in SPIA, also feel that, not just with the layoffs, but the fact that we're not getting it. Our leadership is not getting how to make a new aircraft or how to do refurb or, you know, during a crisis like we've had, where we could actually do mods at this company, you know, work on models and upgrade aircraft that are already out in the field, etc. So we have globalization right here in the Puget Sound, and it's all the negative effects.
The change that's occurred, that's most evident, is brought to light by the revelation that the company was in discussion with Mitsubishi in Japan to assemble the whole fuselage of the 767 and ship it over here with the systems already integrated into the aircraft. It'd just be snapping the wings onto it and out the door. And there is a public outcry and enough public pressure that the Boeing company is saying, well, that's off the table. But that what's off the table is this manufacturing process for the tanker going to Japan. For the commercial airliner, I that hasn't been said. So the public, and our legislators in Congress, it got their attention because here we have government taxpayer dollars going to a military program, but the work is being sent offshore. Now the Boeing company would like to call itself a global company. Well, there's a fallacy in that, because the Boeing company is a U.S. company. It's a United States company that would not be in existence if the United States taxpayers had not paid for the research and development and the tooling costs and the factory setups, the infrastructure that the taxpayers in this country have paid for in terms of the B-7, everything from the B-17 to the B-2 bomber, all that research and development, all those tooling costs, all that manufacturing plant space and the infrastructure was paid for by Americans. And the company now is saying, well, we need to be global. We need to compete in a global economy. Well, I'm sorry, but we as Americans created that. And in turn, there's a quid pro quo of creating and maintaining jobs here in the United States. And so the focus that occurred just over the last few weeks about this should be broadened. And, you know, this concept of the company going to a virtual aircraft company, which was a McDonnell Douglas concept, where you just have outside vendors produce parts and you bring them in and you just snap the parts together, that needs to be closely examined. And I think the company's loyalty should be put to the test as to whether or not they have the patriotism, whether or not they have the regard for the American citizens here to keep producing these aircraft, which we've paid for. You know, we've paid for this company as taxpayers. It ought to remain here. Just this week, Charles Bofferding, the SPIA president of the engineering union at Boeing, was in Wichita complaining about machinist jobs going to China, and they were reducing production and manpower in Wichita through layoffs, but yet they were increasing production in China. And the company response, the Boeing company response, was, well, we're not sending a new package of work to China, we're just sending more of it. Well, that's no excuse, and I think that's blatant. What's going on?
You know, I think both of us feel, and most of the machinists that we know still feel very proud to be an aircraft mechanic, to be in production, to make Boeing aircraft. But that this company and its concept has changed a lot, even in the last 10 years. And when you talk to people who are working in tooling, if they're still working there, and we had a crib that we were a jig that we moved out to an aircraft on a 5-7 this last on Friday. And it was a new Boeing tool, and it was made for Pratt & Whitney engines for this new extended version of the 757, and there was one part that didn't fit. We made a call, and there was a guy in tooling that came out and knew enough about that design of that and what fitting had to be there that we didn't know, and most of our people out at the flight line had changed a lot of engines, but it was something that just had to be changed so that something fit. We didn't have to call anybody in Wichita. We didn't have to call anybody in Mitsubishi. We had that person that was able to do that. And it rolled out, and we could bring the Pratt & Whitney engine, which was installed in the aircraft, but you can't take these things on and off without a lot of tooling. Just an example of how people put things together, and it comes off, and the people even in the field haven't seen this, or people who buy the aircraft haven't seen this. This is the kind of stuff that we do every day, and when those things start to be down to just one or two people, we end up being a company that's in threat. Our infrastructure is at risk. Our infrastructure at a company is at risk. The Mitsubishi Group as an economic group in Japan has been around for over 300 plus years. Boeing's been around for almost 100 years. And we want Boeing to be around for another 150 years. We want them as a national resource. It may mean that we have to have more national congressional or political control over this company before it just divides itself up and subcontracts everything out the door. And that's the kind of thing that we are, from our point of view, this company is at risk, and our Puget Sound is at risk, our machinists are at risk, our engineers are at risk, people who are shopping every day in the Puget Sound fundamentally will see this rolling downhill on them as well.
On a people level, in this community, as well as within the company in this community, the workers that are being targeted, the workforce that's going out the door with little hope of returning unless we turn this whole concept around, are pretty much in the age group of 47 years old or older. The people that are getting laid off are the most highly skilled at the Boeing company. They're the actual machinists, the tool makers, the crafts mechanics in facilities. And the benefit to the company in laying off this group of people, and you know, sooner or later these people are going to get together and figure out that maybe there's a class action lawsuit in the wings here. They're eligible for retirement in the next few years. It eliminates the companies having to pay them their pension that they've earned over their many years of service. These people are older, and because of that, you know, they're wearing out due to ergonomics and, you know, the stress and working in a factory, and they're utilizing their health care now, and that costs the company. Well, the company eliminates those costs too, because of the wage structure that was brought in the 1992 contract, where there's multiple levels of steps in your seniority. the people that are, have been there for some time, that are in that age group from 47 years old and up, they're in the maximum pay group. They're getting the maximum amount of pay. These people also have a sense of history about the relationship between the workforce and the company, and they're also, these are the tribal elders at the company who hold the tribal knowledge, you know, not just of the manufacturing process, but of the history of the inner workings of the union as well as the inner workings of the company. All these things are what is being sent out the door. The impacts to the community when you get rid of these people are you have a highly skilled group of people that are thrown back out on the streets. They're in an age group that don't have much ability to go back into the normal economic base. They spent 20 or more years of their lives, you know, focused on a very specific skill, you know, in aerospace manufacturing. And, I myself have continued my education while I've been at Boeing. I'm doing that now. You know, it's kind of tough when you're 48 years old and you got a couple little kids in the house. And I never thought I'd be in my 40s and have little kids, but I do, and I think there's other people out there that do. And then to expect for us to be going back to school and we're just going to be able to make it out there. Well, you know, that's a tough row to hoe, and although people are doing it. So I think there's a specific group that's being targeted.
Why didn't the union put up more of a fight with these layoffs? It's, obviously, as you pointed out earlier, the head of the union is pretty cozy with the top of Boeing, but it still seems like union membership would have held their feet to the fire, the head of the union.
I think the lack of leadership has a lot to do with that, and I think that people have seen what's gone on in the relationship between this machinist union district and the company. And as an example, this past week the International came out here and was making a proposal on a strategy for a contract issue. And the union stewards attended this meeting, and it's more or less like they're being told what to bring out to the membership rather than the membership being heard off the shop floor. My idea of a union is the representative body in collective bargaining. So you listen to, we're paying union dues for our union representatives who bargain for us to listen to us, not for international representatives to come out here or a business rep from this district who works for us, who's an elected person, supposed to be elected person, that works for us and representing us, coming out here to tell us what to do and coming out here and telling the stewards, well, what you're going to go out and sell to the membership. It's backwards. And so the membership has spoke up. The membership has raised its voice. I think a good example is the 1995 contract we had with the Boeing company where we went on strike. We had been on strike for 45 days because it was a bad offer from the company and it was unacceptable. And after 45 days, the union leadership, this same incumbent group, because we've got a one-party system that still exists and are still in power, this same group comes out with a worse contract offer, and they go to the membership and they tell the membership to vote yes on it. I mean, they're out there and they're endorsing it. And we had that just recently in our last contract negotiations in 1999, where this issue of job security, which is first and foremost on people's mind, and our jobs being outsourced, was the issue. We had 620 airplanes to deliver that year. We were in the best position in our history to get a good contract. And this union leadership that is still in power today came to the membership and said, buy this contract. They stood right next to Phil Condit, the company's CEO, said, buy this contract. It's a miracle. You know, it's got unprecedented job security language in it, which is vaporized. That language doesn't exist. The language actually codified the subcontracting abilities of the company and expanded them. And any member that wants to read our contract on page 74, Article 27, Section 21.7, it's right there in black and white. None of that language is arbitrable. So why is the membership not raising up a hue and cry? It's because any time this membership does, the union leadership attempts to silence it. And they don't see that this group is the group that's going to, you know, spearhead any kind of opposition to what's going on with their job, their jobs being outsourced. I think another good example is this district and this the machinist union and this district president was the only union body in the whole country that promoted and endorsed the Boeing company's drive to get permanent most favored nation status for China, where our jobs are bleeding off to. And so when the union membership sees these kinds of things, this group is not the group to take care of business for them.
And, you know, I think you would recognize, you know, as a person from the outside, just as well as many other people, that we are unionists. We believe in this union. We believe in what we can do as people active in the union. And I think that we've all been blindsided, but actually we've been blindsided over a 10-15 year period, and we should have responded more than now. We used to think, and I don't think there's any more illusions about that, that we're the most skilled people with the best security and the best future in aerospace, and boom, you know, and it's been a boom over quite a few years that that this company has changed fundamentally, and we as a business union have not responded. It's part of leadership issues. There's a whole thing about how a lot of people love to work on planes at Boeing, and they love to work in tools, and we have a contract coming up again that possibly we may have to strike for this fall. And people have to start getting their finances together now. We have to start understanding what happens, that nobody else is leading us and taking care of us on these finances. Not our contract, not the way Boeing has operated in the last 15 to 20 years. They've changed fundamentally. And we have to respond to that. We have to understand what this reality is, and we have to get out there and be more active and claim our own union. This is something that that Boeing wants us to do: lay back and accept another contract with language that we challenge legally, and we pay a lot of money to lawyers to challenge legally. But those cases are fundamentally things that the rest of the membership is not included in on. And then finally, they don't end up being won. And like we try and trust the contract, and over again, this company has ignored the contract, ignored outsourcing, ignored the whole language in our contract that says we have to be involved in the review of outsourced work, and we haven't had that happen to us. And we've challenged it legally, and it's still out there in Netherlands. It hasn't been worked on. It hasn't been fought. And we haven't had something where we can at least say, yes, we challenge this physically. We challenge this against this company and the direction of this company, and put them on warning for it. That hasn't happened yet.
The language, and the direction we should take is that not of sitting down and discussing with the company what they're going to give away. We need to have percentage limits on the work to be done. If there's $100 worth of work that is going to be done, then there should only be 20% of that can be outsourced. And we may need to look to the past to win the future and stay in, you know, the employ of the Boeing company. I think our workers need to, and our union members need to take a look at Flint, Michigan, and the 1935 contracts with General Motors, and maybe we ought to think like Flint.
Do you think we have just under 2 minutes left? Do you think that the recent layoffs and all this other stuff building up has brought a dose of reality to the rest of your workers in the union?
You think reality active? In which?
Well, you think they're going to be more active and not take it anymore?
Oh, I believe so. I think that the membership that's left at the company in this contract year are the hardcore people. We're the people that have been there, you know, through 3, 4, 5, 6 contracts. And we're, like I said, we're the tribal elders. And I think we know what's up. And I think just like our brothers and sisters at Pratt & Whitney, who used to have 30,000 union members there, and they're down to 5,000, you know, this is it. You know, if we don't turn it around now, if we don't stand now, it's like, you know, die on your feet, live on your knees or die on your feet. And, you know, we're going to have to stand up to the company like we have before, and we're going to have to stand up to our own union leadership like we have had before. The direction's going to come off the shop floor, and the strength is, and that's how it's been, and that's how it's going to be.
And I don't think there's any more illusions that people really can hang on to. And everybody wants, you know, a good wage, and they want a secure future, and they want to do work that they're proud of. And I think that there's increasingly that becomes an illusion at the Boeing company, and that we need to reclaim that sense of pride and work, and bring people back to work that's here in this Puget Sound. That we can't afford to be, quote, global when they're just wrecking the company. We've seen it as just a one-way deal.
All right. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. Is there a website or a contact address where people can get a hold of you?
We do have a website. It's www.youaretheuniontib.com, and that's spelled out, youaretheuniontib.com.
Okay. All right. Well, I want to thank you both for coming in this morning.
Okay.
Thank you.
Just been talking with David Clay and Tom Buchanan, who are both with the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers at the Boeing Company.